fighter for Dallas, both under Bush and Obama. I'm not a baller, I'm a brawler, calling y'all to come harder. I'm from the land of the free labor that planted the planet of black and branded to scram it over to Canada. A fan of radical bandits and bandanas who cram in the banana clip and rat-a-tat-tatted and they spat the grammar to scam y'all to clamor up. The damn ladder to grab for Excalibur, not a rap battler, but the next caliber. Catch the program, not just my pentameter.
That's Boots Riley, American poet, rapper, songwriter, producer, screenwriter. We just have about 15 seconds. The importance of art in bringing that to your political activism.
Well, art is are the words between the words. It unifies us. It allows us to know that other people are thinking the same thing we are, and it's part of an essential part of building a movement.
We're going to continue the conversation and post it online at democracynow.org. Boots Riley, tell Homeland Security we're the bomb. And that does it for our broadcast. A happy birthday to Julie Crosby and Vesta Goddars. And our condolences to John Randolph, our cameraman, whose mom died. That does it for our show. democracynow.org is our website. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today we'll talk about drought, forest fires, and climate change.
You can make sure KBOO Community Radio continues to be part of informing and entertaining Portland and the world for years to come by designating KBOO as beneficiary in your will. Thank you for thinking about KBOO and for the future of independent, community-supported media. For more information, contact Monica Beamer at 503-231-8032 or email monica at kboo.org.
KBOO co-sponsors an album release concert, The Cream of Portland. Ranjani Krishnan is an Indian woman who has spent the last 20 years in Portland. The Cream of Portland is her first album, blending influences of world folk music, modal jazz, Renaissance polyphony, and Indian ragas. The album features local musicians including Randy Porter, Martin Zarzar, and Tariq Banzi. The concert takes place at Tabor Space, located at Southeast 54th and Belmont, on August 29th. Doors will open at 6:30. Tickets are available at creamofportland.brownpapertickets.com. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Peña Flamenca de Portland, August 30th at the Headwaters Theater in Portland. This month, La Peña's show features artists from the Bay Area and France, including Andrea La Calena, Cristo Cortez, and Ricardo Diaz y Brenna McDonald. Again, that's Peña Flamenca de Portland, August 30th at the Headwaters Theater, located at 55 Northeast Farragut Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the 4th Portland Renters Assembly and their March for Housing Rights. The assembly is on August 26th at the Midland Library from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. There will be speakers on the housing crisis and community organizing, personal stories, large and small group discussion about political strategy, but also defending and otherwise supporting each other. Snacks and childcare will be provided. The march is on August 28th. It starts at City Hall at 6 p.m. with a rally and ends at the Multnomah County Building with another assembly. The theme will be Housing Rights for All and will encompass everything from homelessness to affordable housing to tenants' rights to at-cost public housing. More information can be found at kboo.fm under Community Events or portlandrentersassembly.info.
You gotta fight for your right!
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tom Dwyer Automotive Services. a full-service automotive shop located next to Portland's Selwood Bridge for over 30 years. They're a Blue Seal certified shop committed to client care and community support. Information on their eco certification, client carbon neutral program, courtesy shuttle, rentals, and more at tomdwyer.com or by calling 503-230-2300.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you
smoke?
What?
You smell smoke?
I smell smoke all the time.
Well,
the devil's here.
That's right. It's not nearly as bad today as it has been the past several days.
No.
But those of you who don't live in the Portland area or in the Pacific Northwest, you may have heard it's pretty much on fire. The world is on fire, at least this part of it.
Before we go any further, I have to say this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor, who's here, and me, Joe Uris, and the number to call, 231-8187. What's up, Abe?
Okay, well, we're going to talk about these fires.
Fire!
We're going to try to put these fires in their context, which is the rapidly warming climate of our planet.
No, that's not true.
What's not true?
Well, the climate isn't warming.
It is. How do you deny that? Tell me right now.
I'm a Christian. No, I'm not. Wait a minute.
Yeah, you notice I just kind of sat there dumbstruck?
I noticed that.
Why? Because that's not an acceptable rebuttal to the question, why do you deny the climate is warming? The only way, really, the only grounds on which you could deny the fact that the climate is warming is if you simply refuse to believe objective reality. Unfortunately, we have an awful lot of those kinds of people in our country.
Well, here's the thing. There's two things that I'm confused about.
What's that?
One is the
only two? Wow, you're doing well.
One is the opportunism that suggests that they, that is the kind of right-wing weirdness, the leadership of it actually knows that there is climate change and just is exploiting ignorance. The other is that they really believe that this is all just a, kind of a phase of the great network of planning from God.
Well, that's very convenient.
Yes.
That's a little magic wand you can wave in just about any possible situation that happens to clash with your established worldview.
Yeah.
God, that's genius.
Yeah.
Why didn't I think of that?
I don't know. Because you're not rich and powerful. Something.
Yeah, maybe. All right. So the Pacific Northwest is burning. When I say the Pacific Northwest, I mean large swaths of Northern California, huge chunks of Oregon, mostly in the east, huge chunks of Washington State, and a big chunk of British Columbia. Also, much of Alaska is on fire, close to unprecedented levels. According to NBC News, about 7.2 million acres have burned this year as of August the 22nd. 1.3 million of those acres were actively burning as of last Thursday. This is on top of conditions that have done nothing but set the stage for this sort of thing. California, as I'm sure you've heard, is in its fourth year of what is classified as extreme drought. What does that mean exactly? Well, some of the indicators will point a picture of that for you. Snowpack in the Sierra Nevada, upon which California depends on for virtually all of its drinking water and agricultural water, was at about 3% of normal.
Wait a minute, 3%?
It was 3%. Of normal the last time it was measured. That was in the Lake Tahoe area. Groundwater supplies in California have been so heavily tapped that the state is actually subsuming in large areas, meaning sinking closer to the center of the earth as water is extracted from underground aquifers.
100% of the territory of Oregon, constituting Oregon, is considered in drought at various levels, more so in the drier eastern parts of the state. That same is also true of Washington. 100% of Washington state is considered to be in drought conditions. This is on top of the year just gone, 2014, which was the warmest year on record since humans began keeping such records in the 1800s. The climate is warming.
No,
shut up. It's warming. The only question that remains, and really there's no question here either, is whether the activity of human beings has contributed to this condition. Based upon the absolute incredible volume of available evidence and consensus among scientists whose business it is to measure and observe these things, the answer is unequivocally yes. Human activity is contributing to the warming of the climate. Now, could some of this be cyclical? We know from our studies of history that the Earth has cyclically grown warmer and cooler. Could part of this be just part of a warmer cycle? Well, yes. Even if that's the case, however, it's unequivocal that human activity is exacerbating the problem. So to you global warming deniers out there, and I'd like you to call. If you don't believe, first, that the Earth's climate is warming, and second, that human activity is contributing to this problem, I'd like you to call and explain why. It's happening. It's true.
You want to open the door?
I do.
To the vast numbers of 30% of Americans, maybe 40%, believe that the entire universe is only 6,000 years old.
Well, they would also be wrong, just like the people who deny that the Earth is growing warm.
Okay.
So I want to hear from those folks today. I want to talk a little bit more about the overarching problem of climate change and what it means for human civilization, and also about how human short-sightedness has gotten us into the cul-de-sac, so to speak, in which we now find ourselves. I submit to you today, dear listeners, that industrial capitalism, which is a little bit more than 150 years old, has thoroughly wrecked our global ecosystem. It has only taken us about 150 years to do what could be irrevocable damage, the consequences of which could be measured in the millions of human deaths and in the millions of displacements, a displacement of millions of human lives, not to mention the millions of species which have gone extinct since industrial capitalism arrived on the scene in what has now come to be called the latest great wave of extinction to hit biological organisms on the planet Earth. In fact, the effects of industrial capitalism have become so pervasive, so widespread, and so measurable in so many ways that geologists have now identified the era in which we live as the Anthropocene era, meaning of human beings. Such is our impact on the planet.
Wow.
What do you have to say about that?
Well, I have to say about that first of all, it's no surprise. Second of all, I assume that nothing reasonable will be done about it.
That's probably a pretty safe assumption. Although you look around the world, there's plenty of reasonable things being done. Unfortunately, not enough of them are happening here.
Well, look, people have... here's what puzzles me about all this, seriously. If I were extremely rich, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be here. But no, if I were extremely rich... The fact of the matter is that I would look to my future, my legacy, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, and so on. I'd want them to be able to enjoy the fruits of my success, and that would mean I'd want them to live in a wonderful world, you know, like the great song that Louis Armstrong recorded, What a Wonderful World. And I would... therefore want to spend a lot of my money, and not necessarily all of it, but a significant amount, in converting our energy system to solar and wind. I would want to spend a vast amount of money rebuilding the flora and fauna. I would want the world to be a wonderful garden because I have the wealth to do that. And I want my children and their children and their children's children to do that. But I don't see that happening, not really.
No, because of short-sighted human economic behavior.
So
that's why.
So are the people who are extremely rich stupider than the people who are not extremely rich? I can't be.
Stupider might not be the right adjective, and it also might not actually be a word. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Okay.
Is it stupidity? No, it's short-sightedness and it's sociopathic behavior. It's disregard for the consequences of one's actions. It is sacrificing the future of all of humanity, indeed of all of the biosphere, to serve the one's short-term interests, to serve one's status in the pack of human beings. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Now, before we go to the phones, I just fingered industrial capitalism as the culprit here. Why did I do that? Well, here's something that might put that in a little bit of context. According to the BBC, if all of the world were to live with at the consumptive standard established here in the United States of America, in other words, if everybody in the world had a middle-class American lifestyle, whatever that happens to mean, we would need about 4.1 Earths to sustain that lifestyle.
Well, that's an easy answer. We'll go to Mars.
Yeah, that's only one additional planet, and it doesn't even have a biosphere. So not a good short-term or long-term solution, Joe. Sorry. Thank you for playing. Even if you took the average levels of consumption around the world.
Titan's good.
No, it's not. Titan, the moon of Saturn. No, yeah. It's not. If you took the average rate of consumption around the world, we would still need more than one Earth to sustain the way we want to live. So the question comes down to, are we willing to change dramatically the way we live? And are those of us in the developed Western nations willing to make even more dramatic changes to the way we live in order to do so sustainably on the one planet that we have? And I'm guessing for a lot of people, the answer is yes. But for even more, the answer is no.
Okay, you've really cheered me up, man.
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
All right, let's go to the phones. Leslie, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I was wondering if you could address the Swiss-based company Nestle and their role in this, in attempting to suck water out of Washington State. Washington told them no. They are sucking, I think I read it was 30 million gallons per year out of California with the support of Jerry Brown still. And Kate Brown seems to be willing to let Nestle come to the gorge and some kind of scheme they've come up with, some kind of corporate exchange of water. Maybe you want to talk about that.
Now, I can talk broadly about Nestle and about the question of bottled water in particular. But what I don't have are specific statistics on how much water Nestle, for example, has bottled and what the opportunity cost for that water is in terms of other potential uses.
It's in the Guardian.
It's in the Guardian. Okay. I can say this, however. We have more fresh water available in this country than any other nation in the world, but we drink more of other stuff than we do of water. We have plenty of clean water that comes into your house at the turn of a tap. There's absolutely no justification for bottling water in a piece of plastic and shipping it hundreds of miles to be sold to somebody else when somebody in that location could simply turn on a tap and get a glass
There's
of water.
There's actually an origin.
It's absurd. There is no justification for it.
There's actually an origin historically for the Nestle behavior about water, which is that when I was a kid, all the water, and this was in Southern California, all the water that we got was very hard and really not tasting good. Mm-hmm. And it was shipped from the Colorado River and from various sources and bottled by a water company called Arrowhead.
Yeah, I know Arrowhead.
You remember sure. Arrowhead. Yeah. And we had these tall, cooler things, and we got these big 10-gallon things of water, and we flipped them over, and they went blah, 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 and they filled
it. Yes, those still exist, Joe, in offices across the land.
Oh, yeah. Wow, it's wonderful. But that company, Arrowhead, which used to produce two kinds of water for this purpose, one was a distilled water to which they added fluoride called Puritas, and the other one, Arrowhead Springs water, allegedly from Arrowhead Lake in California. That water was sold, that whole company was sold to Nestle. Hmm. And Nestle has been buying up these kinds of companies all over the world, really. Nestle is a notoriously bad neighbor. Nestle was the people pushing women in third world countries to become dependent on fake milk. Mm-hmm. Instead of using breast milk for the feeding of their babies. Nestle is a really, really opportunistic company.
And their chocolate's not very good.
And their chocolate's mediocre at best. So, although they're buying more chocolate companies. So
caller, I'm not sure to what extent that answers your question, but the Nestle problem is a big one, and it's something we ought to address further
on. Well, and locally, we need to pay attention to what Nestle wants to do near the Bridge of the Gods.
Right.
Where they want to essentially bottle the natural spring water that comes off the mountains and put it in a plastic bottle, which is probably not a good idea anyway, and then sell that. And it's very possible the state of Oregon will roll over for that.
Does that address your point, caller? Nope. Looks like we don't have her anymore. So bottled water is a bad idea. Avoid it. Use the water that comes out of your tap. If you don't like the way it tastes, there are many ways that you can filter it and then stick it in your fridge and drink it later when it tastes much better. Seriously.
Yeah. I'm just laughing.
There's no reason to buy bottled water, period.
Yeah.
You can get a refillable bottle if you need to take something with you.
Yeah.
You know, the only bottled water exists to serve circumstances of convenience, really, and no other reason.
But all these people walk around with this bottle of water and they're hydrating.
I'm not anti-hydration. Let me go on the record right now.
Well, it turns out that the mythos of 8 glasses of water a day is a myth. It's in the New York Times today that it's a myth.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Roy, good morning.
Hello. Hey, there's actually 3 types of orientation toward the present thing about global warming. The one are what are sometimes called true believers, which accept the whole model. Then there's the ones who reject, the deniers. And there's a third group to which I belong, which are the skeptics. This is based on the work of the Sloan Professor of Climatology at MIT, who says the problem with the global warming model is that it hasn't produced as much heat as it would indicate from the model. And he says this is because he predicted it, that there's a blow-off in the upper atmosphere of heat into outer space, which has now been verified twice by infrared photography from the satellites. And he says that what we're going to do is, the global warming's happening, we're causing it, but it's only going to raise mean tide to high tide, and you're going to lose some land. So he feels that there is a panic that's been induced, which is based on faulty science. And so that's my position. And I feel that the reason you get a lot of resistance is because, not because people know that, they don't know that, but because they sense underneath it that there's some attempt to take control of every aspect of our lives and accomplish other things which have to do with, for example, capitalism versus socialism, which you brought up too. Industrialization is the problem, not industrialization run by capitalists. The biggest ecological disasters in the world are the Aral Sea, run by the Russian socialists, Chernobyl, run by Russian socialists. I mean,
so you think it would be more accurate for me to say simply industrialization rather than industrial capitalism?
Yes,
okay,
absolutely.
I'll concede that point. Industrialization is the problem.
Well, yes. In fact, you make a good point in another way. In the Soviet period, Russia dumped nuclear waste into the Arctic. I mean, it did a lot of really stupid things. So
yeah.
it's not completely the capitalist model, but it is certainly the model of modern 20th century industrialism.
Okay. All right. My point is, though, that we can let... there's a second point, too, about the pollution. While we're putting the CO2 up there, we're also putting a lot of soot in the upper atmosphere, which is reducing the amount of sunlight coming in. And so there's been a new list of factors that have to do with this. So anyway, my main thing is we should be reducing... I used to work in the energy-saving business. We should be reducing the use of energy. We need to insulate our homes better, take the bus, all that. You know, I'm a town car driver. Take the bus if you can. And we need to accept... I've talked to people in the car about this, who are in Greenpeace, and they don't want to concede that we may need to use nuclear power. Nuclear power is probably the best thing for reducing CO2 output. Anyway, thanks.
Hey, listen, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Well, actually, I think I need to address this nuclear power issue because it is indeed true that nuclear power is relatively pollution-free at the production of it. The problem is two things. First of all, nuclear power plants are notoriously poorly designed. I give you Chernobyl and
Fukushima.
Fukushima, thank you. And in fact, and Three Mile Island. And in fact, given that you have no problem with that, you have the issue of what do you do with spent fuel? Now, it's conceivable that you could refine it, change it, reuse it. But what actually happens is it gets stored in water somewhere, and it doesn't have a safe home, and it lasts for thousands upon thousands of years.
Or if you're at Hanford, you just put it in open ditches.
Yeah, that's right, good.
Go ahead.
Or let it flow down the Columbia.
Right.
So it really is, while it is true, and France, for example, is very dependent on nuclear power, it is true that nuclear power is immediately well designed to avoid the kinds of pollution that carbon-based power plants produce. In the long run, we haven't yet developed the willingness to spend the money and locate the places where we could take all this extremely poisonous material that lasts for tens of thousands of years and somehow stick it in a salt mine or something. Mm-hmm. It isn't happening. It's not going to happen because Nevada, which is the place where they originally planned this, has totally rejected that. And I don't think it's feasible, actually. And I think that the designs that exist for nuclear power plants are fundamentally bad. When Trojan was closed, it was closed for two reasons. First reason was there was an active resistance to it, really unpopular movement, effort and popular movement against it. And secondly, it turned out that everything was getting really brittle. All the metals were changing. And it was very, very risky.
Because of the prolonged exposure to radiation.
Yeah, yeah. Radiation does great harm in those circumstances. Hmm. And so, it was too costly. And PGE decided to fold their hand.
So the caller is right, though, in a strict sense, in that when nuclear power generates electricity, there is no CO2 released.
That is true.
I do want to touch on a couple other points he raised. First, he talked about the fact that we're putting out more soot and particulate matter into the atmosphere, and that's blocking the insolation of the addition of energy to the atmosphere by the sun, as if it's sort of some zero-sum game that we're playing. For example, we're putting out all this carbon dioxide, which is warming the atmosphere, and he's saying that that's sort of canceled out by all the soot and particles that we're putting into the air. I don't know if that's a zero-sum game. I don't have the science there. But I doubt it. The fact that the global average temperature continues to grow, continues to increase, would seem to belie his argument.
Well, I think it does. And I think what we're seeing is an enormous amount of methane, which is really serious because it's much more globally warming. That's happening
Indeed.
Very rapidly.
Lots of methane is being put into the atmosphere.
And we're also seeing the oceans warming and the creatures in the oceans dying. And we're probably going to have no food fish at some point in the future.
And while it's true that most of our power comes from combustion, from burning various things, most of the things that we burn for energy are pretty dirty, like coal.
Coal and oil.
Gasoline. Yes, those are pretty dirty. They do put a lot of soot and particulates into the atmosphere. But things like methane, for example, methane is natural gas. If you have a gas stove in your house, you're burning methane. Methane burns very cleanly. Puts very few particulates into the atmosphere, but it does put a lot of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. So I don't really buy that argument that the additional particles of soot in the atmosphere somehow balance out. Yeah, the amount of carbon dioxide. No. And the last point I want to touch on from the caller is he talked about global warming, rising sea levels, and he used the phrase, it turns mean tide into high tide, meaning what used to be the average what used to be high tide is now going to be the new normal, going to be the new average tide. So high tide is going to be much higher than the old high tide mark. What does that mean for us here in Portland? Probably not a whole lot. But if you live in Bangladesh, it means an awful lot.
Well, or New York City.
Or New York City, or Miami, or any other low-lying place.
Of course, the flooding of Miami would be a mixed blessing.
Well, that's a topic for another time. And let's not forget that a huge majority of humanity lives within a few miles of a coastline or a river.
Yeah.
So the prospect of tides rising is not something to be lightly brushed aside.
Well, and we know that the ocean is, in fact, rising.
We do.
And
yes.
Because when oceans are warmer, they expand, just like any other. It's just physics.
Right. And when you're talking about global warming and its consequences, you're talking about a very complex system, and you're talking about overlapping problems. You're talking about problems that multiply one another. For example, if the oceans were to rise significantly, you're looking at millions of people being displaced because where they used to live is now underwater. Where do they go? They go farther inland. What happens then? They compete for resources with the people who already live there. They strain infrastructure that happens to be there. But global warming is going on everywhere, which means you're looking at a reduction in the amount of arable land that's available to grow food. You're looking at smaller supplies of fresh water. So all these problems compound one another. It's not just a question of millions of people being displaced. It's millions of people being displaced to areas that A, can't handle the strain, B, can't feed all these extra people, and C, become very crowded and very combative in a short period of time. It's a cascading series of problems, not just environmental, but social.
Yeah, and I wanted to add one thing. Our able engineer pointed out that in order to operate nuclear power plants, you have to use a lot of water.
Yes, you do. Let's go back to the phones. Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Abe and Joe.
Good morning.
Wow, awesome show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have heard about this show on Showtime called Years of Living Dangerously.
I have heard about that.
Yeah, so
I've not seen it.
Yeah, I just watched the first episode and part of the second one, but it's really good. The first episode, which you can watch for free online, has a Christian climate scientist she's evangelical, and she lives in Texas. But she believes climate change is real, and she's working really hard to convince people, evangelicals, that, you don't have to, be an atheist to believe in climate change. So for climate skeptics out there who think that the two are incompatible, should check her out. Her name is Catherine Hayhoe.
Hmm.
And, she actually was here in Portland, speaking for the World Affairs Council on that very topic.
And what's the name of the show again?
Years of Living Dangerously.
Okay.
And, they take all these high-profile folks like Don Cheadle and Harrison Ford. He goes into Borneo and talks with the interior minister about how they're slashing and burning orangutan habitats and how that's having an impact not only on orangutan populations, but also it's polluting. And, you were talking about those layers, right? So they slash and burn these forests to turn them into palm oil plantations so that we can have Nutella, right? So You've got palm oil plantations that are replacing the biodiversity of these dense rainforests and wiping out these animal populations that are already threatened. So just in the act of creating one monoculture, you're affecting all these other things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty good because it uses, these high-profile figures to kind of highlight and show on the ground this is what climate change is actually looking like in these different places.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that show. It is pretty good. I also think there's something that you would think Christian fundamentalists could embrace, which is to say, and this is not my beliefs, but this is theirs as I understand it, that God is angry, that he's punishing us for all our sins, and the way he or she, I guess it's he, always he, is punishing us is by allowing us to fall into a terrible energy trap.
It doesn't seem to be.
Why not go that route?
Right. And then the last caller, the male caller who was awesome in calling in and being a climate skeptic, he mentioned that, the reason that we have this whole climate crisis in the media and, is that the government, is trying to take control over our lives, and it's really like this socialist plot. The thing that ignores is that we're living in a world of corporate control over our lives. The only thing is we don't realize it because we've been given the illusion that we have a choice between Coke or Pepsi, between driving a Ford or driving a Toyota. But really, corporations have more control over our lives than the state in many cases. And it doesn't explain why the government isn't moving forward aggressively to address climate change with all of these major policies. And, Naomi Klein speaks to that in her book, This Changes Everything, and talks about how, the deniers want to say that this is all about this conspiracy for, communist or socialist control and central planning. And she's like, well, No, it's not. But when you actually, if you assume that the problem is real, and just assume that climate change is a real thing, that what we have to do as a planet is going to have to be very centralized and very aggressive for every day that goes by that we're not actually making real changes to the system, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you're right.
Yeah, so those are the two things. And then I wondered if either of you guys, and I'll leave you guys with this question, I heard about this documentary, Cowspiracy, and the thesis of that is that this dirty secret of the environmental movement is that the agricultural industry is actually the main driver of climate change, in talking about monoculture and in talking about methane off-gassing from cows and the beef industry.
Are you talking about cows farting?
Yeah, well, no, not just that, but also, like I was explaining, like slashing and burning forests to turn it into one crop.
Oh, okay. Well, you said methane outgassing from cows, so you know, yes, that prompted my question.
You couldn't resist it, is why you said it.
And the amount of water and the amount of food that's required just to raise a cow, right? And then you look at the number of cattle, and then the land that has to be cleared of whatever biodiversity there is so that they have grazing land. You know, it's that's what the thesis of this film is that nobody wants to talk about how the agricultural industry is really at the heart of climate change, because they're the ones destroying the forest and at the same time contributing all of this carbon and methane gas.
Well, I think you're making some very good points. I want to have you leave us and go to another person.
Appreciate the call.
But I really appreciate the call. I also wanted to talk a little bit about monoculture, if I may. We have decided... We, that's not you or I, that's the big, you know, the big grain operators.
The Royal We?
The Royal We, right. Who have turned the Midwest into a vast plantation for soy and for corn, GMO corn. And what that has done is again, it's monoculture, and it locks us into a certain kind of production and a certain kind of pushing of a certain kind of food, a certain diet, and, of course, the vast, vast industry of cows and chickens and such.
Raised and confined in really horrible conditions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know.
The call makes a very valid point, which is if you want to do something in your life to address climate change and general environmental degradation, eat less meat or cut it out entirely.
Well, yeah,
it's really hard to argue with that.
Or target your meat each.
Engineer Steve just said something really mean. I'm not going to repeat it.
Well, okay. You're not going to repeat it, so we'll let it go. Listen, I think that was a very interesting call.
It was.
And I think it's important that this discussion take place on KBOO, because even though I think our large part of our audience is believes in, and rightly I believe, there is climate change, and a lot of it is man-made, if not all of it, I think that's really important to analyze the power structure that produces this situation.
Agreed. So this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. The number to call to join this conversation, 503-231-8187. I also want to draw your attention to a couple other sources of information. The first is our show page, KBOO.FM/The Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. There you can find a link to today's show, and embedded in that description are links to some of the source materials that Joe and I used to gather our facts for the show. Basically, our background reading, if you will. So all that is there, and I encourage you to go there and read it, and you'll get an idea of what we're talking about and where we found it, and perhaps those resources will serve you again in the future. The other place is our Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Those same links to those same reading materials are there, so I encourage you to go take a look and read those articles. And also hit the like button while you're there, because it makes us feel good.
Yeah, a little self-serving there.
Yeah.
But I also want to remind people that you can communicate with us online. How do we do that?
Well, you can leave comments on our show page at kboo.fm/The Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, and also at Facebook, facebook.com/Abe and Joe.
Okay.
Let's go to the phones. James, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to start by responding to something the last caller said, if I may.
Certainly.
Corporations are an extension of the central government. They are governing bodies within this neo-Stalinist regime that we have been enslaved.
Well, I'd argue that government's an extension of corporations, but go ahead.
Well, the imperialists own the government, and then the government uses corporations as pawns.
You actually have, James, you've called a lot of times, and you have a vast and complex conspiracy theory, which seems to involve a notion that there is a single powerful conspiracy going on from the get-go.
The same view as Chomsky.
Not quite.
I've read Chomsky, James, and I got to say you don't sound a whole lot like Chomsky. But go ahead.
The main point that I would like to make about the global warming, and I'm willing to concede, being that I'm not a scientist, that man has caused global warming. I don't know if that's true or not, but just for the sake of argument, I will say that man is causing global warming. What I would like to know is, why do we need to give a central authority the power to tax our air, which basically leaves us without a right to life?
Wait a minute, I'm not even following your leap there. What central authority is going to tax the air?
The global government that this is all controlled by.
I'm not aware of any air taxes. I could be wrong.
Well, what do you think this carbon tax is all about?
I think it's a way of dealing with the production of carbon dioxide.
That's a tax on the emissions of carbon dioxide, which
it's
is a whole lot different than
our air. The air
tax
we breathe.
Air.
It is a tax on the air we breathe. That's
James, wait a minute. No. I think, okay, let's take that phrase, a tax on air. I think if you heard that phrase out of context, you would say that means I've got to pay every time I draw a breath, and a carbon tax is not, that's not the same.
You know, the imperialists, they do things incrementally. They just slowly, like, do you think 100 years ago that the American people would have accepted Obamacare? It would have never happened. They just slowly, over time, further enslave us to where we have really no choices.
Well,
to capitulate to their will.
Yeah, and 150 years ago, people would not have accepted moving pictures, but we have those too, and we're more or less intact. I'm not sure where you're going here.
That is not a legitimate point, because 100 years ago, Edison came out with moving pictures.
I said 150 years, but
no, come on.
But we're dancing around. James, bring us home, please.
Well,
wrap it up.
And number two, what if the science is all purchased by these imperialists?
Okay, James, I just want to say one thing. Your idea is all-encompassing conspiracy theory, and that ain't the way it's played. That is not factually true. It's interesting. You've called a lot of times suggesting various ideas about it, but there's a lot of historical information that you seem to want to ignore. But I'm going to let it go at that, and I'm going to let you go, man.
Thanks for the call. Just handed a note here. Robert Hunziker, the noted climate change activist, will be a guest on talk radio tomorrow on KBOO 9.7
FM. That's really
FM,
worth catching.
8 a.m.
Yeah.
I encourage you to tune in. Who's next, Steve? Francis, good morning.
Hi. The water.
The water.
The people who profess to be Christians, who decide that there's no problem, that they don't need to address it. Someone was speaking about that earlier. I wonder if they, to me, this needs to be promoted differently among them, because they were given dominion over the earth to take care of it. So they need to follow that big commandment they got at the very beginning. But water, there's so many things I need to talk about the water. Right now the forest fires are crazy. And one thing that I know you guys haven't spoken of these at all today about the fires, but something I noticed watching them on a news report, the little helicopter flying over, dropping stuff out of a bucket.
Yeah.
That visual to me is absurd.
Is what? I'm sorry.
In this day and age, absurd. In this day and age, as much technological advances as we have had, how it is that that is the only thing that we can still do.
Well,
fly a helicopter over the fire and drop little.
Well, Francis, to be fair, there are a number of things happening to fight fires. First of all, there's that. There's also fire retardants that are being dropped by large airplanes.
I understand that, but I'm talking about the technological advances that have not been made in that regard.
Well, what would
there has not been? I don't see any. California, half of the people fighting the fires in California are inmates from a correctional institution in the area.
Hey, she's right about that.
Now that to me is absurd. Also, they may make $2 a day, maybe. The water in Libya. I'm wondering if Nestle got a hold of that, probably. The water in Libya that was in the underground...
The aquifers?
Yeah, thousands of years old. Real sweet, sweet water, supposedly. First thing NATO did was bomb the river that Gaddafi had made to bring that water to the people in the coastal region. So they're leaving in herds. I mean, thousands of people are risking their lives to get out of Libya. There's no water. And we can debate on what this corporate control is all about, but as long as we keep giving corporations the status of people, the only thing corporations think about is short-term profit.
That's certainly
true.
That's exactly
what's going on right now.
Well, it's all... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
The fracking in California, they don't talk about how much water is used in the fracking down there. And the livestock, how much water is used for that. Someone just mentioned it earlier. There are things that we as people can do if we stop letting corporations have the same power as we're supposed to have.
We agree with you, and at least I agree with you. I think Abe does, too.
Yep.
And
In the process of dealing with this, we continue as humans to do crazy things. Go ahead.
I know. I just think you're right, and I think that Klein.
Naomi
Klein, right? Her book, This Changes Everything, is a very good overview of what's going on and what really needs to be done. The arguments, the fundamentalist arguments that are maintained against climate change and so on, seem to have their roots. First of all, it has the roots in an ignorant notion of a set of charming fictions written by people who had no knowledge of the world, really. They thought the world was flat and they thought the whole thing was short-term deal. That's number one. Number two, I think that that can be exploited, and who it's being exploited by is people who basically, no matter what the existing centrist Democrats say, they invent a way to oppose them because they want to control things, political power specifically. And they don't care about the truth of anything. They lie all the time, and those lies become magnified by a media system which is fundamentally, I believe, at least in terms of its real function, pretty much a conservative Republican endeavor. So, you know, that's what's going on.
Yeah, and that's what my point is. We're not acknowledging the big picture. And somehow people who are exploitative personally are allowing corporate control to just run everything.
Well, I'm not sure allowing is a fair thing.
I am flabbergasted and amazed and intrigued and just appalled at how someone like Donald Trump is considered a viable candidate for the president of this country.
You know,
the things that he is saying.
I'm going to let you go, Francis. I appreciate your comments very much. But there's one thing I wanted to say about Trump, and I think we'll do a whole show on him if he survives.
No.
I don't want to talk about him, but he's out there and he's real. So, hey.
Okay. Well, but the main thing to understand, I believe, is that if you had been in Germany in 1920s and into the early 30s and you'd seen Adolf Hitler, you would have laughed. Funny little guy, funny ideas. You have to realize that Donald Trump has an enormous charismatic appeal to people who are angry and frustrated and have no analysis, no class analysis, and no logical analysis of the crises that we're in. And there's lots of people like that. And many of them, most of them probably, are in the so-called Republican camp and are encouraged by Republican money. So in a way, Trump is the future. That's something I want to say, and Abe totally disagrees with me.
Thanks for the call, Francis. Appreciate it, as always. Coming up this morning on KBOO, 9 alternative radio award-winning journalist Naomi Klein speaks on transitioning to climate justice.
I'll be darned.
At 10, Air Cascadia is off. We'll hear flashpoints instead. Topics include what the current international market meltdown means for regular Americans, more on the flawed parliamentary elections in Haiti, U.S. policy in the Pacific and its influence on the relationship between the Koreas, and a new report analyzing the global data on public mass shootings and why the United States experiences them disproportionately. No expert, but I'd go out on a limb and say it's all the guns.
Too many guns. Right.
At 11, Stage and Studio is off today. Instead, we'll hear the radio zine with host Sarika Mehta. She speaks with Christina Enriquez, the author of The Book of Unknown Americans. And at 11:30, Art Focus is off today. Instead, we'll hear an interview with award-winning filmmaker Hubert Sopper about his documentary, We Come as Friends, which is about South Sudan and how big oil is fueling conflict there. All this and more coming up today on your community-supported radio station, KBOO. And if you're not a member of KBOO, there's no time like the present.
In fact, you know, giving as large as you can afford contribution right now can cut short our begging and whining time this fall. So, you know.
It could.
Could.
Yes.
Will. Actually, you know, I mean, we have to reach a certain amount of money, and, you know, if we could get it all up ahead, we could not have to have begging and whining.
So point your internet machine at kboo.fm, click on the tip jar, and make a contribution today.
Yeah, they're really a cool thing to do. And this is, I want to emphasize something since we brought it up. This is the only on-air source locally of real news and real information and a progressive point of view.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So we're talking about fire and climate change, and we would like to hear from you. 231-8187.
Who's next? Barth, good morning.
Good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Fire. There's about 250,000 acres in the state of Washington that are burning right now.
Yeah.
And my neighbor is actually in the Army Reserve, and he's being mobilized to go fight the fires. He's done this once in the past, and he's now going again. He's got a 3-week deployment. And he says where they're going is rough country, changes in elevation, no roads, that there is no ready source of water there, and that the closest lake that the helicopter, the single Chinook that they have available, can get to economically has now got its water level reduced to the point where they can no longer pull water out of it because of damage or threat to the existing fish. Trout in the lake. So they're going to be doing fire lines by hand and fire breaks, and they're going up with a couple hundred people. He said the last time they went up for a smaller fire than this, they took 800 men. They're not the only people in the field, but a lot of firefighting like this now is done by hand, by people with backpack water bladders that are squirting the hot spots by shovels and hodads, and they're moving the ground, and they're working. These are boots on the ground in a real meaningful way. These are people that are making a difference and working for the interests of all. It's one of the good things that our government and our military does, and I wish that they didn't have to do it quite so much. So on that point, I'll just say, you know, thank you, gentlemen, ladies, anybody in the field, prisoners, you know, thank you very much.
No, you make a really good point, and we thank you for the call. I also want to just throw something out because it's one of my favorite odd and maybe funny but also awful things. The rule in Southern California has always been first there's wildfires, then there's mudslides.
Erosion, yes.
Yeah, so we're not, even if and when these fires are controlled or just die out of their own accord, there will then be enormous amounts of muddy water, useless water, mud, falling down, sliding down, knocking houses out. This is really, really, really a crisis that has to do, I think, with global warming, as well as a crisis that has to do with poor planning.
Thank you for the call.
Yeah. Hey, 231-8187. We're
next?
Talking about fires.
Sean, good morning.
Good morning, you guys. So the very first part, I'll try to be as quick as I can.
Okay.
One of the most important pieces of this is that the economy is not even considered part of the GDP. And the environment in economic terms is considered an externality. So the government and all the wonks that talk about the economy, they consider the environment to be a separate entity from the economy, so it's not even considered.
Hmm.
So the irony is that they don't, you know, if the economy is not, if the environment is not a part of the economy, then they don't really concern themselves with what they do to the environment. And who ends up paying for that is us. You know, it's amazing. The other day I was just actually watching a great video of David Suzuki, the biologist. And he made this point about these very things and saying that they did studies showing that if we have to replace, and we do pay for a good part of this, if we had to replace all the things that nature does on its own on our behalf, you know, the filtering of water, the pollination of crops, the on, it would cost us roughly about $33 trillion a year to replace that.
A mere bagatelle.
A mere bagatelle. Having said that, we are destroying a lot of that, and however much that's adding up to, that is what we're having to pay for.
Well, I think you're making a really important point as to the question of whether or not economists are recognizing these externalities as not external. That's a mixed argument. But it is certainly the case that there seems to be still no understanding of ecology, no understanding of the interrelationship of species. We are still poisoning the bees because there's profit in the insecticides that are being produced, and it turns out kill the bees that are the very basic pollinators in our world.
Right, but the fact is, it is true that they do not consider the economy to be a part of the GDP. And
you mean the environment? They don't consider the environment?
Yeah, the environment. Yeah, exactly. Hmm. So what I wanted to ask real quick, because it ties into something that an earlier caller said, is I just got through writing a letter to the local paper, I'll just say the Eugene Weekly, that has to do with the issue they brought up about what we're talking about right now. And I was wondering if I could quickly just read it because it ties into what has already been said.
How long is it?
It's just really short. Can I just really read
it? Yeah, go for
it. Quickly,
okay.
Please.
So John Kenneth Galbraith, who was a great economist, this is based off his book, Economics in Perspective. And I wrote, he writes in his historical account, Economics in Perspective, about France's physiocrats believing in the 1700s that the primary economic engine of the world was agriculture, which, of course, has turned out to be a primary driver of climate change extinction. Physiocrats were proponents of laissez-faire economics and natural law, meaning just let things take the course to drive the economy on its own, and it took precedence over governmental intervention. And Galbraith recounts how their efforts to avert the French Revolution through reforms was futile. In the chapter, The Merchant and the State, government was there to do business's bidding, not the reverse. We can call that Citizens United. Paradoxically, a counter-revolutionary exiled to the U.S. in 1800, Pierre Samuel Dupont de Nemours, built a mill in Delaware and went on to create one of the largest, most toxic petrochemical companies in the world. A proponent of nature from a land long sustained and proudly on organic farming, should become the planet's toxic opponent. In this context, Galbraith's words become prophetic and prescient. He goes on to say, the rich and privileged, when so corrupt and incompetent, do not accept rescue reform. Lack of intelligence is an undoubted bar, sore pride, righteous indignation, and wounded dignity. How could anyone be led to believe that the wealthy are other than the most worthy? There's also the matter of time preference and psychological denial. Why diminish the joys, comforts, and contentments of the short run by contemplations of the horrors and disasters of the even modestly longer run? The reforms are a slight puff of wind encountering a developing hurricane.
Very nice.
That's what I have to say. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, nice letter. I hope you put it around on the internet and other sources. Okay, well.
I'd have to say, as we wrap things up here, I talked earlier about how industrial capitalism is the culprit, and a caller corrected me saying, no, it's just industrialism in general, to which I agree to an extent, but really, it's capitalism that's the problem. Capitalism is an economic system that has to grow continually. It has to grow in order to work. And when you put an economic system in a closed biosphere and you tell it has to keep on growing, eventually you're going to bump up against the limits of that biosphere. And that's what we are experiencing right now.
I think you're right. And I really appreciate people staying tuned here to KBOO, 90.7 your FM dial. Remember, we're the best in public information, the best in opinion, and the best in music. Stay tuned.
We'll be back at you next week.
Real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
On Saturday, August 29th, from 2 p.m. until 5 p.m., the revolutionary music and spirit of Miss Nina Simone will be celebrated by three generations of Grassroot News on KBOO Community Radio.
I put a spell on you. Cause you're mine.
Let us put a spell on you Saturday, August 29th from 2 p.m. until 5 p.m. with the music and revolutionary life of Miss Nina Simone, right here on 90.7 FM, KBOO.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First, on alternative radio, award-winning journalist Naomi Klein speaks on transitioning to climate justice. At 10, Air Cascadia is off today. We'll hear flashpoints. Topics include what the current international market meltdown means for regular Americans, more on the flawed parliamentary elections in Haiti, U.S. policy in the Pacific and its